What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Auto insurance can all seem the same until it comes time to use it. So don't get stuck paying more for less coverage. Switch to USAA Auto Insurance and you could start saving money in no time. Get a quote today. Restrictions apply.
What are you laughing at?
Laffy Taffy. They have a funny joke on every wrapper, and I love how fruity they are. Banana's my favorite. Want one?
Sure. Mmm, so smooth and creamy.
I like to eat them after school and after dinner and after...
Whenever you need a good LOL?
Yeah. So, here's the joke. What do clouds wear under their shorts?
Thunderpants. That is good.
Laffy Taffy. Deliciously funny. Head to LaffyTaffy.com to shop now.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Cricket Unfiltered. It's our wrap of day three from Lords, and Australia have grabbed control of this test match. They lead by 221 runs with 8 wickets in hand. Play was curtailed a little bit by the English weather, but still enough time for Australia to clean up England in the morning and then set about getting a massive lead. Good morning, Paul Dennett. What a night for Australia.
Hello, Menes. Hello, everyone. Makes me think of the preview that the BBC did before the series and Ebony Rainford-Brent quoting the famous Mike Tyson line and adapting it to baseball, saying, well, Mike Tyson used to say, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the mouth. And I think that today or yesterday was Australia punching England in the mouth. It was a very, very bad day for England.
Yeah, it was. And we've got so much to talk about. But I can just give you an insight into how bad it was for England that after play, they sent out their spin bowling coach to do the press conferences. And one of the English media made the point that not only were they just putting out the spin bowling coach, but there's actually no specialist spinner in the England team. So instead they sent out Jeetan Patel, who is a New Zealand spin. He's from New Zealand and he's been brainwashed by Brendan McCullum. So we just got this sort of trite lines that they pull out about trying to score quickly. So, you know, England haven't got things right on the field and they certainly haven't got it right off the field.
Reminds me of Australia years ago. I think it might've been after one of those horrendous days they had in that first test in 1997, that they actually sent Errol Alcott to the press conference. And I remember Neville Oliver on ABC radio saying what a disgrace that was, that, you know, you've got to show a little bit more respect to the press conference than sending the physio.
Well, I'd much rather see Errol Alcott than Jeetan Patel. But anyway, it was a terrible, terrible stroke from the England management. All right, so let's get back to the play. So England started the day with 6 wickets in hand. They had Brook and Stokes out there. And from the second ball of the day, Ben Stokes was caught in the slips by off the bowling of Mitchell Starc by Cameron Green for just 17. And that left England 5 for 279. So a tremendous start for Australia, Paul.
Well, if you're not true to baseball, that's what happens. You know, he didn't play a shot in anger, got a good one and was out. He should have been playing shots.
The point is,
and I'm going to be critical of the way that they played, but there is that still that point of that if you do play proper test cricket, as everyone was lauding Ben Stokes for doing, eventually you may get an unplayable delivery and off you go for not many. Had he been swiping and swishing, he probably would have scored more. Had Harry Brook, who ended up getting a 50, played orthodox cricket the whole way, he may have got one that was good and not got so many. But I think that as we're going to talk about, there is a middle way. You can still be attacking without being reckless.
Exactly. And look, Stokes did get a good one. It was the first ball of the day was sort of a fast, shorter delivery that hurried Stokes up. And then the next one just bounced a bit more outside off stump. Good length delivery from Starc and found
I think the
edge.
First one hurried Brook up. They got a quick single, didn't they?
Oh yeah, you're right. Sorry, it was Brook. And Starc started really well. And I thought, you know, that was just such a vital moment. You know, clearly if England could get through that sort of initial burst, we saw Travis Head coming into the attack an hour into play. So they really only had to bat sensibly for an hour or so and try and keep Australia out there. But alas, that doesn't play into the baseball tactics. So Stokes was out.
Travis Head, when he did come on, took two wickets in and over. I mean, what were your thoughts, Menez, when Travis Head came? Did you think it was a good decision to bring him on?
No, I actually put out a tweet that I don't think Travis Head should be bowling. And I stand by the tweet. I think, you know, you're an hour and 10 minutes into play. You've got four quick bowlers. I'm sure if you're Stuart Broad or Ollie Robinson, you'd rather face Travis Head than Mitchell Starc or Pat Cummins or Cameron Green or Josh Hazlewood. And in the end, Australia did manage to buy a couple of wickets because I think the England lower order thought, oh, we're going to get a few here against Head. And what, Ollie Robinson came down the pitch and was stumped and Broad swung across the line. So, yep, Cummins got that one right, Paul.
Look, I'm being a bit unfair, given that I've been espousing the theory of baseball and saying that England's going to win and everything else. And I've picked on a micro thing from you, where the macro thing is, as things stand, my predictions are looking pretty sick.
but I'm, you know, I thought Head bowled well. But going back to the early wickets, so there's one wicket that's really drawn the ire of many people. Harry Brook, who's playing really well, was 50 of 68 deliveries when he spooned a short ball to cover. Mitchell Starc went short to him. Brook backed away and just hit it to in the air to Pat Cummins at cover. He took an easy catch. And, you know, Brook is someone that can score quickly. He'd been given a life on 25. And that just seemed a very, very soft dismissal.
It's so soft that one day they're filming the kind of the story of baseball. If the actor playing Harry Brook had played that shot in filming, they would have said, look, yeah, good, you got caught. But they wouldn't have played that bad a shot. Come on, mate. We're going to have to make it look a little bit more authentic. I think Mike Atherton in the Times made a good point that last summer, even though they scored at a breakneck speed and Johnny Bairstow did some amazing things, the feature of his play was still intelligent aggression. And I remember watching it that you're thinking the scoring rate at which he was going, he must have been doing all sorts of crazy things. He was just defending the good balls and absolutely smoking the bad ones. And as I said at the start of the show, there has to be a middle way. It was tough out there. You know, he'd been struck on the body. He'd was facing some serious heat. But yeah, to back away and play that shot when he'd been doing it all the previous day without much success, it just wasn't a percentage play.
And a bit more humble pie eating. I think the selectors got the team spot on. The Australian tack was perfect. I thought Mitchell Starc, he got Root on the evening of the second day and then starts off day three and gets Stokes and Brooks. So Root, Stokes, Brooks, three massive wickets, all to Mitchell Starc. He does bowl boundary balls, but he does bowl a lot of wicket-taking balls. And I just think we saw that in full effect.
Are you saying that I should be getting humble pie or you or both of us?
No, just generally, like sometimes we criticize the makeup of the attack, but I think they've got this one right.
I think that Starc has had a wonderful morning, and I'd agree with that. I think on balance, I still thought that Boland might have been a better option.
No, here we go. And then you wouldn't take it long to bite back. Go on.
Oh, you know, you're allowed to look at things without having to be 100% implacably one way or the other. I still think that Boland would have bowled well on this pitch. Starc, after a poor first day, had a fantastic second day with the ball. I think those statements are all perfectly valid.
Indeed, they are. Just pulling your leg on this Saturday morning after very little sleep for the last three nights.
I don't even know where I am.
We're living on English time zone, but still trying to work on Australian time zone. So it's pretty hard. All right, so England went to drinks at 6 for 311. Bairstow was 16 not out. Broad 8 not out. And I think you know, there's a real danger here that Bairstow can make a plucky 50 or 60 and actually get the England total to pretty much around parity with Australia's first innings. But first ball after the drinks break, Bairstow continued the trend of dumb English dismissals and just hit a gentle loosener from Hazlewood to Cummins at mid-on for a simple catch, tried to slog it over the top. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, I know the Lord's lunches are famous, and perhaps Johnny Best, I was like, need to get up and get the pads off and be ready for the lunchroom.
Yeah, I think it was just a poor shot, and that sometimes happens with the way that they play. I'm less critical of the intent from him than from other players. I think it's just one of those things that happens. But, yeah, he's obviously been disappointed with that.
Yeah, I mean, I just thought, have a look at one after the drinks break and don't make Australia work for your wicket. You're the one that needs to be there right to the end of this innings and get as many as you can. Show some ticker. And that was just meek, very, very meek. So that left the tail to face some hostile bowling, not from Travis Head's end, but from the other end. And Cameron Green hit Stuart Broad very hard on the head, a short ball that missed the grill and just cannoned into Broad's jaw. It was actually a pretty hard hit for Broad there.
He showed some ticker as well. Like, he kept on going. I mean, that must have hurt. And you never like to see it, but it shows the... It shows what Cameron Green can do. He's a very, very handy bowler to have as our effectively backup seamer.
That's right. And with Lyon unable to bowl, it's really, really important that he can take some extra overs. So after that hit in the head, Broad went LBW. Robinson was out stumped for nine, trying to hit head into the crowd. And there's a bit of history for those two. They do play together in county cricket for Sussex, so they know each other pretty well.
Just pick up on that, to credit Alex Carey, it wasn't stumped because it was a catch, and Carey took such a good catch. Everyone's instinct watching it was, why didn't he take the bails off? Because you just do that. But then it became apparent it was such a big nick and a really good catch.
No, you spot on. It was caught behind. I've got the image of Robinson running down the pitch. So he was out caught behind. Then Stuart Broad, LBW to head, swinging across the line, plumb in front. And then Josh Tung was the last to go, caught by Renshaw off Cummins for one. Jimmy Anderson not out, zero. Mitchell Starc, 17 overs, 3 for 88. Pat Cummins, 16.2 overs, 1 for 46. Josh Hazlewood, 13 overs, 2 for 71. Nathan Lyon, 13 overs, 1 for 35. Cameron Green, 9 overs, 1 for 54. And Travis Head, 7 overs, 2 for 17. And Steve Smith also bowled an over. So the wickets were shared around, and good effort from the Australians to dismiss England for 325. So trailing Australia's 416 by 91. And yesterday morning, England lost 6 for 47 in calamitous fashion. It really did potentially cough up the ashes.
Absolutely. It was a horrific morning. And sadly for England, how bad it was then put in context by what happened next.
Yeah, so Australia had to come out to bat under pretty heavy skies in London, and the ball was doing a bit. Australia faced, I think, 6 overs before the lunch break. Khawaja and Warner got through to the lunch break without losing a wicket. And then went on to put on 63 for the opening partnership. Warner battled to 25 off 76 deliveries. Before he was out, LBW to Josh Tung, who pinned him plumb in front. One of my co-hosts sent me a message that it was missing leg, but it wasn't. It was smashing into leg stump. And Warner...
That was live. I said, I'm not denying it after the replay. But yeah, I got that one wrong as bleary-eyed umpire did it.
So Australia lost its first wicket at 63. And they actually battled pretty hard to tee. They only scored 69 runs in that middle session, just losing the wicket of Warner. Khawaja was 45 not out. Labuschagne, 8 not out at the tee break. And then after play, there was only about an hour's action before the rain came. But in that time, Marnus Labuschagne was dismissed, spooning a wide delivery off Jimmy Anderson to Harry Brook at Gully. He was out for 30, and that left Australia 2 for 123. They put on 7 more before the rain came, so they're 2 for 130 at stumps. They lead by 221. Khawaja's 58 not out. Smith, 6 not out. That's Khawaja's third 50 in 4 innings. I mean, terrific stuff for him. He really struggled in English conditions before this tour, and now has put that all to rest with three half centuries. I mean, the pitches are to his liking, but we're seeing some phenomenal batting.
Certainly are. And, you know, you could say the pitches to his liking, or the pitches have been to his liking, but, you know, you can't do much more than on a pitch that is doing something. There's some quite alarming bounce at points during the day, and he's batting in grey conditions against an attack led by Jimmy Anderson, and he's still scoring runs. I think that it was a very fine performance from Khawaja, and England really missed an opportunity, and they missed literally some opportunities. There's one that Khawaja pulled straight through the hands of Jimmy Anderson, who was fielding at mid-wicket. There was another one that Broad had LBW to, I think, Labuschagne. Given not out, they didn't challenge it. The replay showed that it was out. And on another day, they didn't bowl badly, England, but under those conditions, I think a par result now would be Australia 4 or 5 down. And the fact that Australia have resisted that, only got to 2 down, is a very impressive effort by the Aussies. And it was kind of symptomatic towards the end, where Jimmy Anderson, under these conditions, was bowling with the wicketkeeper up. And, you know, he eventually did get the wicket of Labuschagne, but there was one where he was bowling with the keeper up, and I think Labuschagne slapped him through point for 4. And you thought, geez, you don't like to say it, but for the first time ever, Anderson's almost starting to show his age, potentially.
Yeah, definitely. And it can't be helping them, the fact that England is scoring so quickly, that they're actually not giving their bowlers much time to rest. I mean, you know, England didn't get a full day. The England bowling attack didn't get a full day's rest between the two innings. And it's going to catch up with them as this series goes on. And yeah, I thought England looked pretty tired and ragged by the end there. As you say, the conditions were in their favour, but, you know, Khawaja's patience really blunted their attack. And I can only imagine, you know, if Australia can get through that, the morning session on day 4, what the England attack's going to look like after lunch.
Yeah, and I think that Warner, although you know, on the scoreboard it's not a massive innings, Warner played a nice little innings as well. It's one of those, it was a more valuable innings than 100 in the second innings when you're just slogging batting for a declaration is. It was a very valuable little innings. And I didn't mention it before in our preview, I don't think, but I meant to. I found it quite strange that England have gone into this game without Chris Wokes. And I'm not saying that in hindsight. It's what I would have definitely got him into the side. I mean, his Lord's record is almost comical. Like, he's got a batting average of 61 in test matches at Lord's and a bowling average of 11. He's just a really, really good cricketer. And I think that they are clearly missing him. In hindsight, you might have brought him in instead of someone like Anderson. I wasn't criticising Anderson's selection before the game. In hindsight, I was, but I would have found a way to get Wokes in there.
Yeah, it would have been interesting to see him on that deck and with the ball swinging around on day 3.
And so, something to their lower order at the moment as well. With the fact that they're kind of Ollie Robinson and Broad coming in at sort of 8 and 9 in whatever order is not great.
Yeah, Ollie Robinson did not want to stay out there and face the short stuff yesterday, that's for sure. So it's all set up for day 4. Hopefully we get clear blue skies and you know, Australia can get a big lead. I think Australia have to be a little bit more conservative than they normally would, given the fact that Nathan Lyon probably won't be able to bowl in the second innings. And for those that haven't seen, Nathan Lyon, you know, went into the ground on crutches with his calf strapped up. They've made no announcements about whether he can bowl or not. I think they just want to, you know, leave that seed of doubt in the England team, but it looks highly unlikely that we'll see him out there in this match and the rest of the series. So, yeah, I think Australia probably need a few more than they might normally, given Lyon's injury.
It's going to be really fascinating to see how it pans out. I mean, obviously, it's always possible that England could hit back and bowl them out and talk of a speculation about a declaration point becomes moot. But The weather forecast is pretty good for the final 2 days. There's going to be, I think, there's rain around overnight and probably some rain around in the morning, but it should be pretty much cleared by the start of play. There will be some sort of intermittently overcast and intermittently sunny conditions, so it shouldn't be too bad for batting. But I think if I was Pat Cummins, my viewpoint would be, yes, I want to win this game, but, and I said this in the show yesterday, there is no way known that I want to declare and give England a chance to suddenly rest things back. Because the thing about the Lord's pitch, everyone's saying, it does flatten out. And if on day five, as there's a fair bit of sun forecast, if it happens to flatten out on day five, and Australia has presented England with what on paper looks like an insurmountable challenge, but England go at it with baseball and get a bit of luck, then it could suddenly turn still from this point, ugly for Australia. I think they should be committed to saying, we're willing to sacrifice the win, and to not to sacrifice the win, but to risk sacrificing the win to avoid having the loss, which is very un-baseball. But I think that they're in a powerful position now. They should give England absolutely no chance of winning this game if they can help it.
Excellent. The brainwashing on Paul Dennett's finally wearing off. I was thinking about that. What would be a sort of target that I think Australia should look at? And I think if they can lead sort of somewhere between 450 and 500 with about an hour's play to go tonight, that's a declaration I'd be comfortable with. Still gives us a good chance to bowl them out because England, you know, struggled about 80 overs anyway. But given the test match and the Ashes are on the line, I guarantee they'll bloody dig in because they're not that stupid. So what do you think?
No, they'll go for it.
Oh, no, I think they'll go for it. But I think there's also at some point they'll try and bat it out.
Well, maybe, but I think by the time that they're at that point, that'll be too late. I think if Australia set them, let's say 450 with 100 overs to get them in, England would look at that and say, it's going to be a pretty flat wicket. If it was a one dayer in 50 overs, we'd back ourselves to get 300 on this pitch. We've got double that to only get a little bit more. I'm sure they'll temper their aggression a little bit, but I wouldn't be giving them that level of generosity, 450 and 100 overs.
Wow.
I would be, you know, by all means, accelerate beforehand and lose some wickets in making it, you know, getting a target higher than 450. But you give England 450 and 100 overs, of course Australia's almost, you know, very likely to win. I know that that amount has never been chased down in Test cricket before. But you look at last summer and the chases that England made, I think four consecutive chases of very high amounts in English conditions. If it happens to flatten out and if they play with that absolute freedom, anything's possible. So I'd be willing to say if it's 450 with 100 overs, let's bat the final 10 overs tonight, absolutely maul it and give them 520 off 90 overs and see how you go with that, champs.
Yeah, right. I mean, I see your point. I think if we've got, you know, 450, 500 with 100 overs, then the Aussie bowlers should back themselves and go for the win. You know, leaving Lords 2 zip up would be, you know, the nail in the coffin for the Ashes and potentially baseball.
I'm not saying to play for a draw. I'm saying don't leave the door open and that you can ensure that you still have plenty of time to bowl them out. But your point again, if you're saying that they need 100 overs to bowl them out, if England get to the 100th over, they'll have won. It won't be a draw.
Well, it's fascinating. Pat Cummins is going to have a tough decision to make. Just last point, and then we're going to wrap this up. On Travis Head bowling, my issue with that is I'm worried that Australia are sort of thinking about, oh, you know, we can't bowl Cameron Green too much and we've got to preserve our bowlers for the next test match. Whereas you've got four quick bowlers. This is the advantage to having Cameron Green in your side. Like, don't worry about that now. Like, get through this match. Give it your darndest to try and win it and stop, you know, worrying about the next match or the next week. Because to me, as I said, an hour into play, I know Travis had got the wickets, but it felt to me Cummins is like, oh, you know, we need to keep our bowlers fresh. So I'll bring Travis Head on. But in fact, you know, the match dictated that our best bowler should be on trying to get wickets. And I just hope that we don't take that attitude into the second innings that, oh, you know, we can't bowl Cameron Green too much. I mean, you know, he's been in the side long enough now. He's a long way out from that back injury. You know, if we need him to bowl 20 overs on day five, he's just got to bloody do it.
No, not at all. I mean, if in doing so, he's going to then, according to the sports science experts, risk doing his back and then being out for a year, that would be insane. And I don't think that they're bowling Travis Head for that reason. I think they're bowling Travis Head because he's a pretty handy bowler and the pitch is doing a little bit. And he took two wickets in the over. He looked good in the tour of Sri Lanka. I think his off-spin has improved and I think he's a viable option. So I'm more than happy for them to give him a few overs.
I hope he does an Ash Gardner and takes 8 for 60-odd on day five and makes another, makes me look like a goose, because I do really like Travis Head. And you're right, he does actually get a bit of purchase on the ball. He doesn't just roll them out. All right, so that's the state of play at Lords. But I want to touch on some very sad news that was revealed overnight, that former Australian captain and a true legend of cricket, Alan Border, has revealed he has Parkinson's. You know, Paul, I'll let you start with this one. You know, shocking news.
Yeah, very sad. I mean, he's 67 and apparently has had it for 7 years. And so I think he's gone public now because people were starting to notice that there are a few symptoms. And so, look, obviously, just wish him all the best. He was my favourite cricketer growing up. And for people of a certain generation, they remember that the one true horrible time that Australian cricket had was in the mid-80s, and it was Alan Border who held the side together. It was often he was the only world-class player in the side, and then Australia came roaring back under his leadership, plus just an absolutely star of a player, averaging over 50 with the bat at a time when Australia seemed to get the West Indies out here pretty much every summer if they could. Like, you know, there was no easy runs back in those days. Absolute champion, AB, and always just seemed indestructible. I remember years later when he was, part of the selection panel, the coaching setup, that Jason Gillespie was coming back from an injury, and Border thought, well, the best way to see if he's fit is to face him in the nets. And afterwards, Gillespie said, I went absolutely full on at this bloke who was, I don't know, rising 50 at the time, and I didn't get a single ball past him. That's how good he still was. So, he belies his Captain Grumpy nickname, in the sense that he seems to be the most affable, friendly guy away from the white line fever. So, he's still going okay, and he's got many years to come. But let's hope that there's more drugs on the way and a bit of a cure. And he said he's no chance of living to 80, let alone 100. But who knows? You wouldn't put it past him.
Yeah, I echo what you said. And, you know, he is just... You know, Australian cricket owes him such a huge debt of gratitude. He was the captain for 10 years. He built a culture that then went on to dominate world cricket post his retirement. And you're right, you know, he has this reputation for being Captain Grumpy, but he was the first ever international cricketer I met. Him, Swampy Marsh, the late Dean Jones, and David Boone at the Royal Hotel in Paddington in the early 90s, and seen him a lot in the press box, and he's been interviewed on this podcast, and he is a lovely, lovely man, very generous. As the opposite of his Captain Grumpy image. And, you know, I expressed to you my concerns about his health privately over the last summer. So I'm not surprised by this diagnosis, but very, very sad, because, you know, he is a true legend of Australian cricket, and, you know, he wasn't able to be at the Alan Border Awards earlier this year. And just send him our best wishes and his family our best wishes, because, you know, it takes a lot of courage to reveal that diagnosis, being such a, you know, important figure in Australian cricket. And I think it's hit a lot of supporters very hard.
Yeah, it was very sad to read. And as I said, he's having treatment. Treatment these days is a lot better than it once was. So there's still some cause for positivity, but it's a very sad announcement.
All right, well, I think we should wrap it up. It's our wrap from day three at Lords. You've been listening to the Cricket Unfiltered podcast. I'm Menes, joined by my co-host, Paul Dennett. I'll drop the pommy, Paul Dennett, now. Seems like you're coming around from that. And we'll catch up, after day four, Paul?
Well, hopefully the lads can take a few wickets and then chase down the target on day five. Don't get too cocky at you, Aussies.
Thanks, mate. Cheers.
This is a Piccolo Podcast production.
Sports Social Podcast Network.